The Tyrant. Late one evening, I made my way along the dingy streets of Miragliano, bound for the Black Boar. A cluster of dwarves was deep in debate with a narrow-eyed Marienburger, their voices hushed and low. A hairy Middenheimer and a mustached Ostlander were tossing hatchets at a target set against a wooden support post. A sinister-looking man, in the colorful robes of the Colleges of Magic, was intently studying a black-bound volume, some treasure, no doubt, procured that very day. As was usual for the tavern, there was a raucous crowd of men from all across the empire, drinking and telling lies of their exploits in the Tylian states. But I had eyes for none of those men, whatever tales they might have to tell, for I found my prize sitting at his usual table. The bounty hunter was sipping from a small glass, which I knew must contain his beloved schnapps. Seeing him thus engaged, I was at once determined that his spirits must likewise be high, and advanced upon the table. Those infrequent periods, when Brunner was in a good mood, had provided me with a great wealth of material for my pamphlets. For a certain loquacious impulse would overcome him, and he would regale me long into the night with tales of his past enterprises. The bounty hunter looked up at me, gesturing for me to sit. The gloved hand that beckoned me then caressed the sheathed blade that rested across the table. I stared at it for a long time, remarking its elegance. It was a long sword, the trusted blade of the empire, its hilt crafted in the shape of a dragon, its guard forming the outstretched wings of the beast, the pommel forming its horned head. Hilt, guards, and pommel were all gilded, the golden surface glittering in the dim light of the tavern. Brunner's gloved hand again slid along the edge of the blade. "It is magnificent, is it not?" the chill voice of the grim killer asked me. I nodded my head. "I have seldom seen so fine a weapon," I confessed. "Even in the court of Karl Franz, I doubt you could find a better one." "Its name, Drake's Malice," the bounty hunter's voice spoke. "A weapon born of one of those noble houses of our homeland, bound to their bloodline, a part of their very being. It is said that this was forged during the great war against Chaos, that it was carried with the crusading army that followed Magnus to the very gates of hell." The gloved hand patted the gilded dragon. "They say there is a magic in the steel, magic that awakens only in the hands of those whose birthright it is to wield it." I stared again at the magnificent sword, imagining its long and bloody history of noble service to the emperor. There was a power, a lurking strength within that sword, far beyond the might of steel. "How did you come to possess this impressive blade?" I asked. Brunner stared at me, his face expressionless. A lengthy period of silence passed between us. I was certain that I had offended him somehow, that he was not going to answer me. But, at last, the tense quiet was broken, and the icy voice of the bounty hunter began to speak of events far from Miragliano, in the lands of the border princes. 5 grunting, straining bodies filled the narrow lane that wound its way between the mud-brick hovels. The men were of vastly different ages, ranging from those who had just become men to an old grey-head. But beyond their ages, the men were alike. They wore filthy breeches of much-patched crude wool, held about their waists by the merest length of rope. Sweat glistened upon their bare muscular chests and trickled into the scarred grooves in their backs where the lash had done its work. The men were clustered about the wooden bulk of an ox-cart, their backs bent as they tried to lift the overladen wagon. One of their number was to slip a new wheel upon its axle and replace the splintered disc that rested against the wall of one of the hovels. A grim-visaged man observed their labors. His face, too, was scarred by a long slash that ran from forehead to cheek. Unlike the peasants, his was the mark of a sword, not a whip. The overseer wore a suit of dark brigantine armor, a collar of chain, and an open-faced, bowl-like helmet. A narrow-bladed longsword rested against his hip. The man's features were hard, his nose broad, his eyes small and cruel. His skin, like that of the laborers, was dark, marked by the attentions of the hot Tylian sun. The mercenary fingered the grip of the heavy leather whip that hung from a loop on his belt.
"Let's not be all day," the soldier snapped. "The baron wants the grain in the keep, and account it for before the sun sets."
The Tylian's words were sharp and lashed at the straining peasants like the whip he carried. A few turned their heads to stare at the quickly declining sun. Suddenly, the sound of horses made every man turn away from the disordered wagon to face the three mounted men who advanced upon the accident. The peasants hastily diverted their eyes, but when they saw the lead rider staring at the ground with the intensity of frightened beasts, their overseer bowed his head, but kept a wary glance on the nearby peasants. Their leader was a lean man, just beginning to show signs of a paunch. His face was thin, his cheeks high, his brow furrowed by wrinkles. The man's hair had a salt and pepper hue of black hair becoming white, and was cropped close to the skull. He clearly enjoyed the regular attentions of a barber's knife. His nose was a sharp beak, perched above a sharp slit of a mouth. His eyes were wide, and glittered with a feverish intensity as his gaze swept over the tableau that filled the narrow lane. Velvet gloves covered his long fingers, white fur trimming the crimson garments. He wore long boots of black leather that rose to mid-calf. A somber-hued hose and tunic completed his garb. A slender sword hung from a jeweled scabbard at his side, fixed to a wide leather belt by a slender silver chain. The hilt of the sword was gold, cast into the semblance of a dragon, with the guard shaped like outspread wings. The golden hilt glittered in the fading light of the sun. The two guards were dark-skinned like the overseer, but their commander had a fair northern complexion.
"Lord Baron,"
the overseer said. The man raised a gloved hand and removed the blue cap that crossed his close-shorn hair. He cast an indifferent gaze across the ox-cart and the human beasts of burden beside it, trembling in their naked feet. The rider's gaze settled upon the Tylian mercenary. There was a cool, expressionless look in the man's sapphire eyes.
"Aldo," he said, his voice flat, almost petulant, "the keep is proving most tedious this evening."
The rider let a sigh whisper from his chest. He began to idly turn his hat about.
"I was wondering if I might borrow one of these creatures."
"My lord baron," the Tylian replied, nervousness entering his voice.
"Do you think that is wise? I mean, there is still much work to do, to bring in the harvest. And you have already, entertained twice this week."
"Aldo, I was wondering if I might borrow one of these creatures,"
the rider repeated, as though the Tylian had never spoken. The mercenary swallowed loudly, bowing ever lower before the rider.
"Oh, of course, Lord Baron," he said.
A thin smile slithered across the rider's face. He turned his gaze to the cowering laborers. The eyes of each man stared up, though not one dared to raise his head. The rider replaced the blue cap, smoothing it into place, and began to wag his finger playfully from one peasant to another. At last, the finger stopped and settled upon one of the younger peasants.
"Yes, I think you will do,"
the deep voice stated. The peasant looked up, fear warring with hate for command of his dirty, scarred features. Hate won,
and before the rider could move, a blob of spittle landed squarely on his boot. Aldo and the two mounted bodyguards moved forward. The scar-faced Tylian brought a booted foot crashing against the knee of the defiant peasant, forcing him to kneel. The gray-headed peasant looked up, a look of horror and anguish twisting his tired face.
"My lord, I beg you," the man implored. "He is only a boy."
The rider favored both men with a withering stare. The other three peasants turned their eyes back to the ground, as if to distance themselves from the events. The rider nodded, and his two mounted guards dropped down from their horses and caught both of the older man's brawny arms.
"You know,"
the rider said, training his angry gaze upon the old man,
"I do believe that you are right. You will provide much better sport than that vermin."
The rider turned his gaze to Aldo.
"Got him,"
the rider snapped. The old man shrieked, straining against the two armored mercenaries holding him. The overseer brought a dagger from his belt and raked it across the belly of his captive, finally letting the dying man pitch forward into a pool of his own blood.
"A meal!"
screamed the old man, watching as his son twitched in the dirt. He looked once more at the rider.
"Bastard!"
he roared. The guard, gripping his left arm, kicked him in the stomach, forcing the wind out of his lungs. The old man bent double, gasping for air. The rider raised his hand when the other guard prepared to deliver another kick.
"No, no,"
the rider reprimanded.
"If you break him, he won't be any good to me. Take him to the keep."
The rider did not wait to see his guards remove the gasping man, but turned his eyes once more to Aldo.
"This mess,"
the rider said, indicating both the ox cart as well as the corpse lying on the street.
"Have it cleaned up right away."
He cast a wrathful look at the three remaining peasants.
"And see that this lazy rabble attends to it."
"My lord Baron," the Tylian spoke, "five men could not repair this cart. How will three manage it?" The rider smiled, wheeling his horse about to face the animal towards his timber keep.
"Just tell them that if they don't, they will be joining the old man. That should give them an extra burst of vigor."
Chuckling at his own jest, the rider galloped back towards the timber fort. An hour later, Albrecht York, self-styled Baron of Yorkvag, sat down in the padded seat resting atop a small awning-clothed viewing stand. It overlooked a small, timber-walled arena beside the tyrant's timber-walled fortress. The Imperial Renegade had taken many years to secure his small holding in that lawless region known as the Border Princes. He had fought long and hard against man and beast, orc and goblin, even the wilds themselves, to make his township survive. He had little to show for his efforts, but York was determined to enjoy what small pleasures he could wring from what fruits his labors had provided. This tyrant of Yorkvag looked at a frail peasant girl at his side, whose eyes stared at the timber floor of his viewing stand. He gestured with his hand, and the girl quickly filled a horn cup with dark Tylian wine. He gestured again, and the woman slunk to her former posture. York let the fluid sit in his mouth a moment before letting the warm taste slide down his throat. It was as if, with every glass, he could taste the terror of the peasants who created it. It was a taste that was much to his liking. He had known terror once, and it was that memory that made the fear of others pleasing to him. He knew that he was now the source of that fear, that he was the dread sovereign who held the life and death of hundreds in his hands. He understood now what pleasure fear must have given his former old masters. It was the power to destroy a life with a simple word. The tyrant leaned forward
as the old peasant man from the road was shoved through the locked door at the far end of the arena. The portal closed at once behind him. The old man stared about him with horror in his eyes. Then he looked up at the viewing stand. York smiled down at him. The cold, humorless smile he had seen real barons and counts make into an art form. Again, memory struck York. He could remember his last moments before such a paragon of nobility. It had been in the throne room of the Viscount Augustine de Chagny, following the successful completion of the Viscount's brief campaign of expansion into the empire. York's role had been instrumental in that campaign, but it was a thankless role, and the Viscount had no intention of honoring their arrangement. There would be no elevation of York, no rise for the spy and turncoat to a position befitting a gentleman. No, the Viscount had shrewdly decided that a man who could betray a good master would betray a wicked one just as easily. York could remember the Bretonian lord's laughter as he pleaded for his life. But it was not York's words that stayed his hand, rather it was the look of hate from the man he betrayed that saved his life. The hate between the Viscount and his prisoner was deep, and it would stoke the fires of rage in the prisoner's heart if the Viscount let him go. And so it had been done. York stroked the dragon-hilted sword at his side, and a cruel smile spread across his face.
"If you beg for mercy," he called down, "I may spare your life."
The fear in the old man's eyes was at once replaced by hate. The man spat at the distant figure of the tyrant, the spittle falling far short of its target. York shook his head.
"Come now,"
he goaded, reaching into the small wooden bowl at his side, and removed a handful of small stones.
"You must have something to say."
The tyrant threw a rock at the peasant, stinging his arm. He repeated the attack, but the peasant refused to beg or cry out as the small missiles struck his body. His hateful glare remained focused on his tormentor.
"Insolent,"
the tyrant declared with a disgusted tone. He dropped a few remaining stones back into his bowl. He reached for a rope that hung from the wooden awning that screened the viewing stand.
"Go join your son, you filthy cur,"
York snarled, pulling the rope. A section of the arena wall below the viewing stand rose upwards, and two massive creatures slunk forward from the darkness. These were monstrous warhounds from faraway Norska. Each of the canine giants was nearly 4 foot at the shoulder and twice as long. Their pelts were brindle, sporting a brown feel with darker black patches and stripes. The hides were drawn close about their lean bodies and were marked by bare gray patches of scarring where the lash had done its work. The skin was tight over the ribs, and the heaving of each animal's chest was quite visible as they loped into view. The massive wide jaws dropped wide, letting thick tongues loll forward as streams of drool dangled from their jowls. The two animals began to pace towards the peasant in an eerie silence. The tyrant had long ago had their vocal cords severed. The peasant looked away from the dogs as they advanced upon him, and trained one last wrathful glare at a chuckling York. Then the hounds fell upon him, pulling him down to the earth. York snapped his fingers as screams rose from the arena floor. Averting her eyes from the gory spectacle below, the serving girl refilled her master's cup. Elsewhere in Yorkveg, shabby figures carefully made their way through the shadow-lined streets of the village to an old disused barn. It was a structure York had given his peasants long ago to hold surplus crops, a surplus that never materialized, no matter how large the harvest was. By ones and twos, the silent figures made their way to the darkened meeting place. A few hearing the sounds of screaming from the fort, turned back, retreating to the mock safety of their hovels. But many more heard the cries and strode even more purposefully toward the barn. There was no light inside, for the eyes of York's guards were everywhere, yet each person managed to find a place, leaning against the wall or sitting upon the floor. Several crawled onto the roof to act as sentries should one of the mercenaries stray too close. In low, fearful whispers, the men began to speak. It was not so much a debate. It had already been decided what must be done. But it was no easy thing to act. The Baron was ruthless and cruel when given little cause. If they should fail to oppose him, they would bring even greater misery upon their heads. Yet, who among them did not cringe in terror every waking moment, fearful of the sadistic whim of their master that could see them spirited off to his torture chambers and thence to the arena and the bellies of his dogs? Fear reaches a point where it can grow no greater, and it ceases to be bearable. The peasants of Yorkveg had reached such a point. The small stash of coins was removed from its hiding place in the barn. Gathered over 5 years, stolen and hidden from Albrecht York and his soldiers, the tiny hoard represented the last hope of the villagers. A quick debate was held, a swift conclusion decided upon, and a young boy, one who might not be missed, was selected to bear the coins away, to the neighboring settlement of Brezano, and hire a warrior, a professional killer, to rid Yorkveg of its merciless tyrant. The decision reached, the men stole once more from the barn, in ones and twos, disappearing into the night. The chosen youth, a lad named Jürgen, stood for a moment with his father, then set off, carefully making his way toward the perimeter wall and one of the small holes burrowed beneath the timber palisade. His father watched him go, proud of his boy, but fearful that the entire endeavor might be for nothing. Another pair of eyes also watched Jürgen depart. Geyer was an old man. A crippling blow from York's soldiers had made him more wretched and poor than his fellows, a beggar among beggars. It shamed Geyer to live off the charity of those who had nothing to give, and that shame steeled the man's maimed shreds of pride. Carefully, he stole his way toward the Baron's timber fort. York might pay well to know what had occurred at the meeting, well enough that Geyer would not have to beg, well enough that the cripple might feel like a man once again. There was no real hope that the boy would actually find anyone, and this way at least one of the people of Yorkveg would prosper from their desperate scheme. The young peasant made his way through the massive stone walls, staring in open-mouthed marvel at the large iron-bound gates either side of the wall. A sentry, wearing ringmail and a scarlet tabard, began to make his way toward the boy, but noting his shabby dress and dirty countenance, decided that it was little chance of collecting either duty or bribe from the wretch. He hastened back to the shade beside the gate. As a town, Brezano was much larger than Yorkveg, and Jürgen was amazed at the activity in the streets. Carts and beasts of burden lumbered along the way, carrying sacks of meal, bolts of cloth, casks of wine, and other goods he could not even begin to recognize. There were soldiers rubbing shoulders with wool-garbed shepherds who maneuvered their flocks with the aid of small, yapping dogs. He saw vendors standing beside wooden buildings, selling chickens and other fowl to every man that looked to have coin in their pocket. As he slung along the press of people, he saw a pair of diminutive figures wearing dark, somber armor and carrying wide-bladed axes upon their shoulders emerge from a large twin-story building. The peasant had heard of dwarfs before, but never before had he laid eyes upon one. He stared openly at the two as they lumbered through the throng. Turning around, he looked at the building the two dwarfs had emerged from and decided to investigate. Jürgen peered into the darkened interior,
marveling at the fact that the building had a wooden floor. He stood in the doorway, gazing across the rows of tables and narrow benches. The room was the largest he had ever seen, larger even than the barn in which he and his confederates had met, and it was filled with a noisy crowd of people. Raucous laughter and calls for more ale, beer and mead rose from every table. Jürgen smiled to see such merriment, a thing he had never experienced in Yorkveg. But the smile was banished in an instant when a massive, barrel-chested man appeared before him. The man looked at Jürgen from beneath thick, bushy eyebrows, and at once laid a paw-like hand on his shoulder. Before the boy could react, the bouncer spun him around and booted him through the door with a savage kick.
"No beggars,"
the bouncer snarled.
"If you can't pay, you can't come in."
The huge man turned on his heel and stalked back into the tavern. Jürgen watched as the bouncer's broad back disappeared into the gloom of the building. Without thinking, he reached into his pocket, pulled out the coins he had been given. But it was too late. The bouncer had already gone. Jürgen hastened to return the coins to his tunic and rose to his feet, wiping the dust of the street from his clothes.
"You don't want to drink there anyway,"
a slender man said from beside Jürgen. The boy jumped in surprise. The man beside him was tall, a full head taller than the boy, but lean. His clothes were much patched, and a slim dagger graced his leather belt. The man's skin was swarthy, darker than most Ilians, and his hair was a mass of oily black curls. His mouth was screwed into a wide smile that displayed a set of blackened teeth.
"I can take you to a place where they don't put half as much water in their beer,"
the man said. The man laid his hand on Jürgen's shoulder and led him away from the crowded street.
"Thank you," muttered Jürgen, "but I am looking for someone."
The Thalian's face brightened, and a look of surprise entered his eyes.
"Oh, perhaps I have seen him,"
the man said, gently nudging the peasant boy around the corner of a small building.
"Or is it a her you're looking for?"
The Thalian's beady eye snapped shut in a knowing wink.
"No, it's nothing like that,"
Jürgen responded.
"Actually, I am not exactly sure who I am looking for."
The Thalian stared back at Jürgen, the smile withering on his face.
"Well, I know who I've been looking for,"
the man hissed, drawing the dagger from his belt.
"I'll have that silver you are carrying."
Jürgen gasped, looking from the threatening thief to the confining walls of the alley the man had guided him into. Seeing no avenue of escape, Jürgen put a protective hand on the pocket that contained the coins.
"You can't,"
he almost screamed.
"None of that," the Thalian snarled. "If you make a noise, I'll have to cut you. More trouble for both of us."
He took a step forward. Then the dagger slipped from his fingers. The thief's eyes grew wide, staring at Jürgen without seeing him. A bloody bubble burst from the man's mouth, and he slumped into the dirt, toppling on top of his discarded dagger. A man appeared behind the fallen body, wiping blood from the knife he had stuck in the thief's back. The newcomer wore a suit of brigantine armor, a breastplate of dark gromril covering his chest. A steel sallet helm of blackened metal covered the upper portion of his head and face. The man finished cleaning his knife, then replaced the blade in a leather belt across his chest. The bounty hunter did not spare a glance at Jürgen, but instead knelt beside the body of the man he had killed. He pulled an even larger knife from the belt around his waist, a massive blade with a serrated, saw-like edge.
"This time you will stay caught,"
an icy voice said from beneath the blackened helm. Jürgen looked away as the bounty hunter brought the edge of the blade against the neck of the dead man. In only a few minutes, the bounty killer had cleaned his knife and returned it to his belt. He produced a sack and dropped the Tylian's head into it, twisting the end closed. The armored figure then stood and turned, heading out of the alley.
"Wait!"
Jorgen cried out, hurrying after the withdrawing figure. Brunner turned the steel-clad head to stare at the peasant from the slit-like visor. The boy slunk away from the terrible gaze, his limbs trembling. The bounty hunter turned again and began to stalk away from the alleyway. Jorgen bit down on his fear of the intimidating figure and hurried forward. The armored head twisted around slowly, the cold eyes narrowing on the boy.
Thank you.
Jorgen managed to force the words from his mouth. The look in the icy eyes remained the same, and more words stumbled their way from the boy's lips.
For saving me from that.
The boy cast a look at the headless corpse lying in the alley, its blood draining away into the dirt. Don't thank me. The cold, flat voice of the killer rasped. If that maggot hadn't had a price on his head, he could have cut your heart out and offered it to the blood god, and it would have been none of my affair. Brunner turned away again, slinging the sack over his shoulder.
You killed that man for money?
Jorgen gasped, horrified and excited by the harsh, emotionless words.
You're an assassin?
He added in a slight whisper. I'm no assassin, Brunner snapped, a cold fire in his voice. He rounded on the boy, glaring down at him. I'm a bounty hunter, and there is a difference, though a moron peasant looking to get his throat slit in a back alley wouldn't be able to understand it. Again, Brunner headed toward the street. Jorgen hesitated for a moment, then followed the bounty hunter. The press of bodies was no less than it was before, but Jorgen noticed, as he followed the bounty hunter, that merchant, peasant, soldier and craftsman alike all made way for the grim figure. Slipping behind in Brunner's shadow, the boy discovered that his own passage was not so unobstructed and found his body squirming between the foot traffic as the people closed ranks and resumed their travel. Brunner walked back down the street toward the tavern from which the burly guard had so summarily ejected Jorgen only minutes before. As the boy advanced toward the building, the steel face of the bounty hunter turned towards him again. Jorgen squeaked with fright as he saw that Brunner's gloved hand was closed about the hilt of his fat-bladed sword, and that an inch of steel gleamed where he had begun to draw the weapon from its scabbard. I trust you have a reason for following me. The bounty hunter challenged, every inch of the trained killer tensed for action. Jorgen began to back away, but a sudden image of his home, his family, the frightened, desperate faces in the gloom of the barn, forced him to hold his ground, to raise his face and stare defiantly at the bounty hunter.
Yes,
the boy said, in what he hoped was like the commanding tone he had heard a baron employ so very often, but which emerged as the high-pitched yelp of a frightened fox.
I want to hire you.
Jorgen thought he saw a flicker of amusement twitch across the hard mouth below the line of the helm. But it was only for a brief moment. The armored figure turned and strode through the door of the tavern, waving a gloved hand for Jorgen to follow. The boy re-entered the tavern. The huge bouncer rose again from his stool, striding toward the doorway, smacking one meaty fist into the palm of the other hand. But the bully had taken no more than a few steps before he saw the man waiting for Jorgen inside. A fearful look made the bouncer's eyes grow wide, and the hairy man returned to his stool, studiously avoiding the peasant boy and hardened killer who had preceded him into the drinking hole.